Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.ByteRadio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my special guest is Corinne Holt, and we're going to be discussing Attuned to Love, Creations for Well-Being. Corinne is an artist, poet, and spiritual teacher, welcoming people to pure presence, to feel the magic of being human, experiencing one's true nature while living in the physical expression of it. She merges experiences as a professional artist, healer, writer, and coach, and her intuitive refinement makes her a strong ally with the call of one's own soul so that the unique creativity in each is invited to serve in the highest manner. You can find out more by visiting her website, which is attunetolove.com, and I do have a direct link to her website in the show page description. So that, I'd like to welcome Corinne to the show. Good day, Corinne.
Hello, Robert.
I'm happy to have you with me today to talk about attuning. Let's get ourselves kind of on the right frequency here.
Yes. Well, thank you for inviting me to come hang out with you for a bit this afternoon.
I'm glad you're here. So I usually like to start the show by having the guest give a little bit of their background, the kind of the journey that has gotten them to the point of where they are now. Because, you know, I have found out so often it's just fascinating one's journey, the twists and turns that one takes in order to get to where they are. So if you wouldn't mind sharing just a little bit about your background for the listeners.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So it's interesting to reflect back on your life in hindsight. So much more clarity, isn't there? And so when I look back, like in my childhood, it was very driven by the physical. You know, we've got the four parts of physical, the mental, emotional, spiritual. And I was an athlete. You know, my brother was 4 years older than me. And so I was very into being outdoors and being in nature and the whole really loving the physical part of life. And then, you know, high school, college, that was really driven by the mental, emotional. And then on the spiritual plane, it was kind of always there, but, you know, in and out, in college a little bit less because there was so much focus on the mental and emotional part. But the spiritual has always really been a part of my life from the time I was 4 or 5 and my great-grandmother died. And I couldn't understand, where did she go, you know? And the answer from parents and such were, you know, well, she's in heaven and, you know, appropriate thing to say to a four-year-old. But that, it still wasn't enough for me. I was like trying to trail her, you know, in my imagination. Fall, like, where did you go? I was like really trying to find her. And so I remember that from a very early age, I was wanting to remember the afterlife. And so that never really left, you know, it just kind of wove in and out of my life experiences. And so In college, my degree was in art, and I was a graphic designer for nearly 20 years. And then after 9/11 hit, there was a major shift in consciousness, and I was led to go into the personal development and growth kind of arena, and went through certification to be a life coach and executive coach, and did that, started a couple coaching divisions for a couple companies and for a nonprofit, and then did executive coaching, and then did energy healing, became certified in a few of those things. So, you know, it was a 12 or 13 year period that was really marked by the art went away, almost didn't do it at all. And I was completely consumed in the art of well-being, if you will, changed the art forms out of the visual arts into the personal development or, you know, the well-being side. And so that all of that just kind of gave me, it was like understanding all the parts of our being, you know, the physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual. And then after that 12, 13 years of doing the coaching and creating curriculums and leadership and that kind of thing, something else wanted to happen. It's like moving into a new chapter. And I spent 3 years kind of in a cocoon, really sitting with that. What is that call of my soul that's next? And it really came to me to merge all the parts. And that's where I was really led to bring the art back into my life. And, you know, mentally I was going, wow, you know, well, okay. Wasn't really planning on that.
Surprise.
Not exactly sure. And so, you know, there's a lot of questions around that, but it kept coming and coming. And so finally, you know, mine did surrender to that and to a lot of things. And so that 3 years, just this major integration for this 3 years. And that's how the art, the poetry, and all that started to come together. Yeah.
You know, as you're talking, each of those steps or each part, I mean, it was just like a jigsaw puzzle. Each was a little piece of the puzzle, you know, and you kind of had to, you know, during those periods kind of carve out what the puzzle piece was, you know, and then, you know, right now, finally getting to this point after that 3 year period of being able to put all the pieces, you know, together to get the picture of where you are right now.
That's exactly how I've described it to people. Yeah, very.
Oh, okay. Say that, boy. You're sending out strong images there. Well, you know, the one thing, I'd like to talk a little bit about kind of each of them, talk about, you know, attuned to love. And so I guess let's just start with the art, you know, because this was one, you know, you said it was kind of it was early on, you did the graphics, and then you got to the point where it came back into your life. Now, you have an ebook, correct, called Poetic Ascension, is that correct?
Yes, it's an enhanced ebook, which means it's a multimedia, images, video, and text.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about that, because, you know, I don't think many of the listeners realize that such a thing exists, you know, and it's, to me, it's pure entertainment. I mean, you know what I mean? It kind of takes books to a new level, and, you know, really makes it experiential.
Yeah, it really does, and they're not as well known because they are, you know, graphic intensive. And so there are some limitations out there with the Kindle and such that because they're memory intensive, they kind of, you know, shy away from that. But for sure on the iPad and some of the advanced Kindles allow for them. And so it does allow you to bring in like JPEGs of your photography or illustrations or paintings, along with text, and then you can actually integrate audio, which I have at the end, a guided meditation, and then I have the Poetry with Benefits videos that are basically the poem put to music and video clips and some of my art. And so, yeah, it's a full-on multimedia experience. And so there's a trailer on my website and also on my YouTube channel that allows you to see what that – a lot of people did ask me, and so I was really – guided to create that, so it creates an understanding about, you know, what that is. Yeah.
So now your website's called Attuned to Love, Creations for Well-Being and Conversations for the Soul. So from your perspective, what is attunement, and how do we recognize what kind of tune-up we need, you know, that attunement?
So what came to me is when I was writing a nonfiction prose book, I started writing phrases that rhymed. And it was like, okay, that's interesting. And then I noticed, okay, this is poetry. That's what's coming out. Wasn't planning on that. And I fought that a little bit too, and then surrendered to it. And what I realized is I would write a poem per chapter, and then after I read the poem, I didn't really need the chapter. You know, it was like the economy of words. It's like everything that needed to be said could be said in 200 words rather than 2,000. And so I decided to just go with the poetry, and then it came to me that the art that I had been doing is actually going to match up with the poems. And so the image would be an energetic match, if you will, to the poetry, and they would combine. And so that was, so all of this unfolded in that 3-year time of integration. And then the poems weren't just art, they were spiritual teachings, universal teachings about love. So to your question about attuning to love and what that means, so love came to me is even beyond our normal human definition of love, being loving and kind and compassionate and all that. It referred to the limitless, organizing, vital essence. So it came in as an acronym. And so, wow, you know, that was really rich. I was like, ooh, and this came through the poetry. And if you think about it, you know, the infinite one, the limitless, organizing, vital essence is what we are. It's the ground of our being. And so when we're attuning to love, we're attuning to the infinite part of ourselves. And that really was a very rich exploration. And so all 40 poems became different facets of that understanding of what it means to attune to love. And then what gets in the way when we are not attuned to that. And so, And then attune means to come into harmonious relationship with something. So if we're attuned to the group, we are in harmonious relationship with the group. And so really the call was to come into harmonious relationship, the mind with the infinite self. The mind, the local consciousness, really coming into harmonious relationship with the infinite consciousness that we are. And then it became the dance between those two. And then that led to understanding how the two work together in the relationship, where there's the leader and the follower, like a dance. One leads, the other follows. Two people try to lead, it becomes like a wrestling match. If two people are follow, you just stand there like,
you go
move,
nowhere.
You know? It's just got to go, I don't know, how about you?
So, well, you know, that's interesting. Yeah. Go ahead.
So it was just one unfolding after another, one poem after another, just led to on this journey and of, you know, I call it poetic ascension because the poetry brought the insight of emerging out of the only the viewpoint and only the perspective of the local consciousness, you know, of the body mind consciousness, and then how to, you know, and how to do that in like pointers to what that looks like and feels like.
Sounds like a wonderful kind of unfolding, and I can see where, you know, in that cocoon period, you know, where that, you know, the transformation happened. And, you know, it's interesting, when you were talking about, when you started to mention the poetry, you indicated that kind of real quickly that you fought it, but you gave into it. Question, you know, what was it that you think that you were fighting? And, you know, because, again, I think that process of what you did, you know, the resistance and then the kind of, I guess, surrender or giving in, you know, that is something that I think people would be smart to be aware of.
Oh, right. The surrender is, yeah, that's, and that became, you know, my experience, my direct experience with the divine is really what created this whole, you know, conversations for the soul, creations for well-being, is everything we're talking about. And it was my mind. It was the body-mind surrendering to the call of my soul. that the mind says, oh, this is frivolous, and who's going to care about poetry? And, you know, people say poetry doesn't sell. And, you know, there's just all these kind of practical things, you know, that is said out there in the world, and the mind attaches to some of those beliefs. Doesn't mean they're true. But, you know, the one of the lines of my poem said, let love lead. And then I saw the dancers, and I ended up painting in those digitally. And so it really... The more into the art and the poetry I got, the more I experienced what it felt like in my body to let love lead. And I had also had the experience in college of taking ballroom dance and having that feeling in my body of knowing what it felt like to have to surrender, you know, to the lead and go with it and not fight it. You know, as an athlete, I kind of wanted to take charge. And so that was a big no-no, you know. And so, you know, so it was, I had that physical experience of knowing what that meant. And so I used that to really feel the call of my soul and recognize what's fighting it. And then it came to me, that's a great question, what you were saying is, what's fighting that? You know, it's the body-mind. And it came to me, that was the general manager of the bodysuit, you know, the mental, emotional general manager. I call it the me GM, right? Some people like to call it the ego, you know, some like people like to call it the ego, but that there's a lot of negative connotations around that. And so being an artist, you know, the picture of a general manager, and if we think about, you know, general manager at a store, a restaurant, we see them and they're usually pretty stressed because they have a lot going on. And, you know, totally understandable. And so when we're stressed out, we're overwhelmed. What's overwhelmed? Well, it's not our consciousness. It's our me GM. It's our general manager. And so it was my general manager of the bodysuit was fighting the call of the soul because it had another agenda. But it's the local consciousness that doesn't really, it doesn't know the infinite. It's in charge at ground level here, right? And so it's not a big, big job. It's managing the mind, the emotions, the physical, the energies coming in, going out, survival. I mean, it really, I mean, think about it. The general manager just made me laugh because no wonder we're stressed and overwhelmed.
Yeah.
Because it's trying to be in charge. It's trying to lead life. And that's not really the role it's meant to have.
Yeah. Now, the first of all, the experience, you know, the me GM, you know, talking about poetry and its popularity or the, you know, the sales ability. I mean, I've over the 7 years I've done the show, I've probably had maybe three people whose works, you know, have been poetic. And, you know, in each time it was one of those, you know, that me GM was doing the same tap dance, you know, with them. That, but I think, you know, in so many cases that we are conditioned to examine our activities on whether they're, you know, the acceptance level, the, you know, the commercial ability, you know, and so many different kind of values or different criteria that have absolutely nothing to do with the actual essence of poetry. I mean, poetry is, you know, kind of gets to the heart and soul, you know, of a particular topic. And so when you said that, you know, that was the one thing, I, you know, I really wanted the listeners to recognize is that, you know, whether some, you know, something that they want to do, if they have a desire or a calling to do it, and they get that kind of resistance from either from within or from without, you know, people around them to just quiet that, to recognize that is, you know, and to allow themselves to be led, you know, in the direction, you know, that they're being drawn. And you know, the fact that you had, you know, the ballroom experience, and, you know, to me, again, this was very much one of those cases where all of your past pieces kind of came into play, you know, and putting that together. And so, I mean, it's wonderful that you're able to basically create, but you were able to define, you know, your place and your goal and your purpose based on all of the very diverse types of activities you've done in the past.
Right, and I think this really applies to all of us and, you know, clients that I have that are, you know, trying to define their purpose. I kind of take them through this process of look at your childhood. If you were to describe it in a few key words, you know, what would that be? For me, it was the physical, very much physical, being outdoors, nature, you know, pushing the limits, all about speed and action, right? And so go through all the kind of major chapters of your life and write down key words, and maybe, and then along with that strength, natural strengths, gifts, et cetera. Because as you said beautifully, is that it becomes a, you know, big puzzle that you then, I call it, you turn over all the pieces and then start putting them together. And then you're set to start creating, like you said, that call to create, and trust that, because we are creators inherently. I mean, creation is going on inside of us every second in all of our cells that are recreating themselves. And so, you know, creation is not something we do, it's what we are. And so to allow yourself to go with that flow of creation. I have clients that are either creating businesses. I say that so many times people have this belief system that creating is about the arts. And, you know, I'm always reminding people, no, you know, creation is problem solving. Creation is, you know, it might be coming up with a financial strategy for someone. It can be with numbers. My father is an engineer, and he was always creating and innovating. And so there's nowhere on the planet where creation is not a part of the flow. And so, you know, that's opening our and expanding our understanding. The MeGM has beliefs, right, that have been infused in there by whatever, parents, teachers, peers, whatever, who have belief systems. And then those are heard enough, and the MeGM starts buying into those. And so, you know, when my MeGM starts saying, oh, that's frivolous and blah, blah, blah. Fortunately, you know, I was an artist, and I also was very aware, very spiritual person my whole life. So I could see my MeGM was doing that, and then I could quickly say, well, that's not necessarily true, right? I hear you, but.
Yeah.
So that, and then to putting all those pieces together of the, I guess the engineer, my father being an engineer, I really wanted to know what's fighting what, you know, back to your question about, you know, fighting the call, you know, and the surrender. I thought, well, you know, what's fighting? What are the parts that are fighting? I wanted to understand how this was all working, right? And then that's where the dance came and the visual started coming and the lead and the follower and the MeGM, you know, local manager. And if you think of a coin, you've got the heads, you've got the tails. It appears to be two different things as by naming convention, but yet it's still one coin. And so it's all one thing, but different facets of it. And so I was fascinated how all these facets were put together and how they were interacting. And that's what comes out through the poetry.
It seems to me you are the embodiment of faceted, multifaceted, when you were talking about creation, you know, and again, you mentioned, books, but, you know, the first thing that popped in my mind is recipes, creating recipes, or just the fact of being a parent or grandparent and that little creation that you work with every day, your child or your grandchild, you know, those are things that, you know, those are just different facets of creation and recognizing that really recreate every day, whether or not we are conscious of it. But I think that if we get more in tune, attuned, to that source, then it seems that I think that the creations would flow more smoothly. And it seemed like, when you were in that, when you were talking about that 3-year period, that it seemed like it was a flow, this led to this, led to this, led to that, and it all came together.
Yeah, it really did. And once I surrendered, it did. And so that speaks to, there was the blockage and the flow of creation was happening when my MGM was fighting it. And once it surrendered, it just, was like a waterfall. And
yeah.
But to your point, I love the point you made about we're creating every day. With people, we're creating either harmony or chaos, really. And it's like,
mm-hmm.
The beautiful thing is like, what am I helping create here? And so
yeah.
it's we talk about inviting the mind, the MGM to surrender. And then people say, well, how do I do that? Because my mind is just going crazy all the time. And so, simple questions. Well, I love that. I think questions are the most important. It brings back in my coaching, chapters of my life. But it's so powerful because the mind doesn't really like to be told what to do. It's like a 2-year-old,
mm-hmm.
But if you ask it a question, it loves to problem solve. And so if you ask your mind, what are you creating? It will answer, And so there's no resistance, and that's why I think questions are so powerful, because the mind really is more open to questions than being told something. And it's like, okay, say an affirmation. I don't feel like saying an affirmation.
Really? Affirmation best.
Think positive. I don't want to think positive. So if you're feeling negative, who can think positive when you're feeling negative? It's just like it's really an impossible task. But if you're having a bad day, I've done this experiment. You think you're having, your mind is making a complaint, thinks it's having a bad day, and your soul says, "Why is today a good day?" I remember the first time I did that, my mind started laughing because it was so humorous, because I could immediately think of something, even though I had claimed it, this is a crappy day. And then soul says, why is today a good day? And then, of course, my MGM starts laughing because it's like, oh, I can list a whole bunch of things, right? And
that was
an immediate shift. Yeah.
That's good. I like that approach. Yeah, every time that you say my GM, just prior to my entrepreneurial path, I was in corporate America and I was a corporate trainer, and I was first in finances, and then I was in the restaurant industry, and in the restaurant industry I was the go-between management and line people in Denny's restaurants of all things, and when the line people started to like me more than they like management. So one of my boss one time banished me to a Denny's to learn how to run a shift, absolutely learn every single thing within a restaurant. And that was everything from dishwasher to cook to, being a server to management. And it was funny because the kitchen people, when I was in the kitchen, they only had me in there one day, and then they said, listen, you got to go, you're ruining our food costs. when it came to servers, I did pretty good with that, even though I dropped a few trains, in my time. But the thing was that, when it got time to being the GM, running the shift, every time I tried to dive into the little parts, the little components, things started going wrong. But when I pulled away and allowed them to run, independently, without my, direct intervention, things flowed smoothly. So, every time you were talking about my GM, I always thought about myself as that, taking that that approach of being, you know, allowing the parts that are working, allowing them to work, you know, and not tinkering, you know, don't fix something or don't, yeah, don't fix something that's already working right or trying. Anyway, but that whole idea of kind of being above and allowing the pieces to work, you know, and then it became less stressful.
Yeah, I love that you had that experience. So there must be a reason I felt guided to bring that up today. I don't always do that, but you know, that's how it goes. And so, you know, for me, because I'd hear the ego, and it's like, okay, well, no one's ever captured the ego, but yet everybody uses that. And it's kind of like my pragmatic self wanted to know more, but what is that thing, you know? Because, and so it really, I guess, with my time in corporate America and executive coaching and things of that nature and dealing with a lot of managers or entrepreneurs, that really resonated with me. And so that's how, you know, the soul speaks to you in the symbols and the language that you already know. And so I'm sure that's why that came through, because I worked with so many either executives or managers that were just really, really stressed because they were so, mm-hmm. you know, goal diffusion, we call it, you know, they were so scattered from all the roles. And then it, you know, really came to me as the local consciousness that I'm managing the entire physical experience has got all these responsibilities, and it's a lot. And then, you know, and then the biggie is, you know, survival, and then survival of the emotions and not being rejected. So mentally, emotionally, physically, oh my goodness, you know, what a job, right? And so I started to have a lot more compassion for that part of myself rather than I go, oh, well, there's my ego. And, you know, then that felt really negative and judgmental. And so it really worked for me to come to soften to that part and to be very compassionate with it. And then to say, look, you don't have to lead this dance. You know, you can follow. That's really what you were meant to do. You know, you're the leader here at ground level as far as making all the functions work, you know, mm-hmm. making sure it runs, but you don't have to be the visionary of the direction. You know, that's really the goal of the soul. And so that really was very helpful for me. Yeah.
Yeah, very much. Well, Corinne, we're about halfway through the show, so I want to take a quick break, and I do want to invite listeners that if you'd like to call in and ask any questions, you can call in at 619-789-4359. And for those of you listening live in the chat room, feel free to type in any questions. I want to give out a little special hello to my friend Gemini Moon, who's there in the chat room. Thanks for joining us today. So let me take a quick break, and then when we come back, Corinne, I want to talk a little bit about ascension. Your book is Poetic Ascension. There's a lot of talk about ascension, so I kind of want to get your take on what it is, what the process is. Do we all do it? You know, just what are the benefits? All of that kind of thing about ascension, okay?
Terrific.
Great. Okay, everyone stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Hello, this is Robert Sharp. I want to thank you for joining us and hope that you are enjoying today's show. Just a reminder that we have a wealth of information and resources available on our website, www.biteradio.me. There is a calendar of upcoming shows, along with an archive link to the approximately 1,000 shows that we have had over the past 5 years. Our show is available as a free podcast in the iTunes Store. You can subscribe there, or even quicker, there is a link to our show on iTunes on our website homepage. We are also on many social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Pinterest, etc., and we have buttons to those platforms on the top of our homepage. And finally, also on the site is a link to the great products we provide, books, greeting cards, photography, and a wellness store with essential oils and personal and spa products. There is so much for you to explore and enjoy on our website, www.biteradio.me. I also very much appreciate you supporting our guests, and especially today's guest. And now, back to the show.
Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us. Again, today my very special guest is Corinne Holt, and we're talking about Attuned to Love, Creations for Well-Being. And again, you can find out more about Corinne and all that she offers by visiting her website, which is www.attunedtolove.com. And again, I do have a direct link to Corinne's website in the show page description. Okay, so with that, we're back, Corinne.
Hello.
There we go. Okay, we're all set. So, ascension. I hear the term thrown around a lot, or coming up a lot. I should say not thrown, coming up a lot. So, would you mind explaining to the listeners what that is to you?
Right. I hear that as well, and I think that that is very reflective of the time that we're in. I mean, it's very, spiritual revolution is taking place. It's a massive expansion of consciousness as we move into fourth density and fifth density. And so it's just a natural unfolding. And so I think that's why we see that coming into our world and media. And what that has meant to me through the poetry is what we were talking about earlier about the MeGM, realizing it's not in charge, not really, even when it thinks it is or thought it was never really in charge. It was just a matter of how much how much it was fighting, our infinite nature, our true nature, or going with it. And when we, surrender and it goes with it, then there's flow, there's creativity, and there's well-being. And so to me, the ascension is the awakening first, the awakening to the fact that, oh, wow, I'm in this together in partnership with all that is, with the infinite part of myself. And so once it realizes it's not the only gig in town, it's part of a bigger picture, then it starts to listen. And then there's this process of listening and fighting, it's back and forth. And eventually, mm-hmm. the more it listens, the more the MeGM is listening to the call of the soul, the more it starts to go, oh, this is kind of good. why have I been fighting this? This actually is working. And it slowly starts to let go. And in the letting go and the surrender, that's where we can ascend. And that's why the title is A Journey of Conscious Emergence, because we start to emerge out of the finite perspective of just the body-mind view, which is finite, and it starts to integrate with the infinite perspective. And so to me, that's the ascension. And then once we realize, wow, I'm not just this body and mind with emotions. I am this infinite part. And then for a lot of people, and I experience this, that I kind of lost my zest for life. It was kind of like, well, this body is just going to go away and blah, blah, blah. And there was a point where I just wasn't passionate about much. And then I think you just kind of have to, the coach part of myself, well, what's that like just to not care about anything and be kind of dispassionate? And then eventually I just let that be. And then the dissension happened where my full body could then integrate this knowingness of being also an infinite self. And then that's where that came to me, is that the magic of life is being the physical expression of source and knowing it. Like, wow. Okay. Yeah. That's the real magic. So the ascension is part of it. And it's like getting outside of yourself, seeing the larger picture. And then the descent is coming back in, being a human being, with the full recognition of being an infinite being, and that everyone else are walking expressions of the infinite. And then, really magic and flow happens.
Yeah. Well, see, now I like the way that you put that, because one of the things that the ascension and the descension, to recognizing the connection with source, and then the descension, kind of bringing that back in to physical expression. And I believe that that is exactly, you know, kind of the process that's going on right now. Like you mentioned, that it just seems that it's in the zeitgeist now. People are, you know, it's almost second nature. You know, it's that natural curiosity as to the connection to something greater than ourselves, you know, and then application of that. And a lot of the time when I've spoken with people about ascension, it almost seemed like they presented it as a one-way trip. One-way trip to the ascension, you know, to the contact with source. And it's, you know, and for me, it's always been about, I mean, one of the things that I always kind of just focus on a lot is this, like, how will this help me here and now? I mean, obviously I'm here for a reason, you know, if there was no reason for me to be here, I would be gone. So, and, you know, that was one of the things hang up with people who channel, you know, entities that aren't in the physical and who haven't been in the physical and say, you know, what the hey, you know, what are you going to tell me about this stressful body, this limiting body, you know, this aging body, you know, how is that going to help me here? So, you know, to me, it's about application, you know. And I just think that it's wonderful you talk about that descension and bringing it back into physical expression. That's great.
Yeah, I mean, I share your sentiment on that because, you know, when I'd kind of emerged out of the just only being the physical body with, you know, beliefs and emotions, and really felt that greater expansive feeling and experience. There was a time where it was kind of like, yeah, I could come or go, it doesn't matter. I mean, literally, I was kind of like, yeah, you know, if the body dropped tomorrow, it's no big deal. Like, I really did have that kind of blasé feeling about it. And didn't care really one way or the other. And then just slowly over time, it started to come back and go, no, this is actually pretty cool, right? And especially when the art and the creativity started to really flow, then, you know, I started to get really excited about being human again, right? And seeing the joy and the magic of being a human with that larger perspective. And so I think I was given pictures and imagery and metaphor because when we're talking about at the level of the infinite and source and soul and spirit and all these things that are not very tangible for the human mind that loves that, it was really encouraging me to bring the images and metaphors to ground level so that way people their minds could start to get a little bit more of a grasp on the intangible as a pointer. Because, you know, you can't map words on the infinite and expect it's going to be really accurate. But it's at least a launching pad for people then to have their own experience, which is unnameable, you know.
Right.
And,
right.
But, you know, you start somewhere, right?
Exactly. And speaking of, I'm going to want to talk just to in the time that we have remaining, talk about a couple of the different parts of your poetic ascension ebook. Part one talks about exploring perceptions. Who am I? You know, and we talked a little bit about that kind of in the beginning of the show of, you know, that that me general manager kind of and how they kind of can skew, you know, our perceptions. So in that particular section, part one, what is it that you explore in there? What are, you know, some of the images that you created that kind of tap into that idea of perception, it's maybe of reality and view of reality?
Right. So it's kind of one of the main first questions that people start to ask when they get on that spiritual journey of, you know, who am I and why am I here and all that. And so one of the who am I questions, I'll just read the end of the poem. Attuning to love, I see what is true. What we are is more relevant than who. And so it, you know, really came that we label ourselves as a who, someone with a name, female, mother, daughter, mm-hmm. wife, you know, these kind of labels. And we get really, and of course we need those labels to operate, you know, on the planet. But when we become so identified with that, then we forget the greater truth is that we are all what? And it became very clear to me that what we are is that love, the limitless, organizing, vital essence, our true nature, that which is forever and eternal, is really what we are. And that's even more important to keep in mind, you know, at ground level. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like in our human experience to really have walk around with that knowing that I am this, the infinite source. And so are you and you and you and all of us. And so that's one of the kind of points. There was another one called Mirage Seen Through. And that's really about looking through the illusion of the medium that defines things a certain way. And, you know, it thinks it's absolutely 100% right. And, you know, most of the time it's not. And so that's just a very short poem that, you know, talks about that. And there's another one called The Know-It-All, which, of course, you know, we've all been that at some point, the know-it-all. And, again, that's the medium thanking it's running the show and knows it all.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of gives you a little bit of a
an idea of that. Yeah, I like that kind of the questioning of what I am versus who I am, because the who I am is ever changing, you know, and you know, if we just allow ourselves to be defined by what we do or our relationship to others, we really do lose the perspective of who we are. I mean, we allow others and allow situations to quote define who we are versus that recognition of what we are. So I like that. That's great.
Yeah.
Now, one of the parts too that I thought was interesting is the separation and suffering and why do we suffer? That's a good question. Why do we suffer?
Right. Well, the subtitle for that section is Fearful Mind Acting as a Buffer Veils Love and Leads Us to Suffer. And so the mind that thinks it's the know-it-all, it veils the greater truth. And so, you know, the greater truth is always there. It's always present. But it's got the curtain up, you know, and it's ignoring it. And so one of the first poems in that section is called Oops, I Egoed. Now, that sounds a little strange, but it came to me through the poetry. That ego, again, as another acronym, is a verb rather than a noun, because I stay away from egos. My ego did this as using it as a noun. And ego is an action to ponder, says the poem, expressing generous opposition to your heart. Mind struggles with doubts, making things hard. It's never too late to drop resistance and warmly welcome your sacred innocence. With fear's antics exposed and judgments reposed, you can playfully say, oops, I egoed, right? and so ego came to me as a verb, that the mind, the general manager, that is exercising or expressing generous opposition to love, to our hearts. And then later someone told me that Wayne Dyer had said ego was edging God out, also as a verb.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, you know, that's, yeah, we're on that same vein there of it's really the same thing with different words, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, and it's, you know, when it comes to the ego, and I've talked about it with others who've written specifically about ego, is that, you know, it's one of these cases where it has its place, a proper place. you know, and in that proper place is being supportive and kind of beneficial for us to live, you know, full and happy life. But then it's also got that the other side where, you know, it has that limiting, kind of confusing sometimes, and sometimes destructive element. So, you know, it's just one of those things where it seems that it has, like I said, if it knows its place, you know, or, you know, you don't get egoed, you know, then you're really kind of on path to really experiencing the fullness, you know, both the connection as well as that individual nature of being human, being who you are or what you are.
Yeah, and it's, you know, what most people call the ego is, again, I'm calling the general manager, and we need that. We need that local consciousness in order to function and operate. It's 100%, you know, essential. And as long as it's, you know, in its role of following
right.
the visionary, then there is the flow. There's not the sense of absence or the need of, you know, not measuring up or something's wrong. But, you know, when the mind is closed off to source, ignoring source, expressing generous opposition to love, that's when all the problems happen. That's when it feels not enough. That's when it feels like there's problems and complaints and what's wrong with me, what's wrong with you. And it's that division that really creates all the havoc. And I mean, that's fundamentally the core reason for all of our suffering, is the block that the mind is putting up to hearing the call of love and the infinite source, right?
Yeah. I just, you know, that idea of the ego being the follower, and you talk about, you know, the ballroom dance, you know, and it's like, if when the follower wants to become a leader, you know, that's when you start stepping on toes, and the dance just doesn't look, you know, very fun at all. Someone's going to get hurt in that process.
Yeah, it's painful to do and it's painful to watch.
Exactly. There you go. Exactly. So now, and then just one other, you have a couple others, awakening and letting love lead. But the last one I want to just touch a little bit on was the emerging and serving. You know, in particular, the serving aspect, because it seems that, you know, being of service is, you know, some of the greatest, most compassionate leaders, you know, in recent history are those who have served the greater good. So, and it seems that, you know, being of service is just so important, but sometimes it's just ignored or it's not given its proper due, I don't think, as far as the impact that it can make for both the individual and for the society as a whole.
I agree. And that's, you know, really being of service is, I think, the greatest fulfillment of feeling source and living source, being the embodiment of love and the infinite, because the true nature of it is generosity and abundance. And so, you know, when the mind gets out of the way of fighting that, then being service to others is like breathing. You don't even have to think about it. It's just what you do. And I think that when we're serving, that's when we really feel ourselves to be in harmonious relationship with the divine. And that brings us back to the beginning of the conversation of attuning to love, is being in a harmonious relationship. And then at ground level, we're in harmonious relationship with our communities and our world. And so it's coming full circle, right? It's that ascent and descent back into, you know, bringing the infinite and love into our day-to-day.
Yeah, very much. Well, Corinne, we are toward the end of the show. So now I noticed on your website that you had in the beginning of October, you had a Facebook Live event. Do you have anything up and coming that you may want to let listeners know about, or what's on the agenda for Corinne for the rest of this year?
So yeah, it's actually every Sunday. It's called Poetic Ascension Sunday, and each week, and it's at 8 o'clock Eastern, 5 Pacific, and it's brief. It's 15 to 20 minutes tops of Sunday evening to just really kind of relax, get centered, get grounded, take a break from, you know, a lot of media or anything that's stressful, and kind of, you know, set up your week with the intention of letting love lead and really contemplating what that might mean in your life or the present moment, as well as moving into the week and applying that to all the things that is on the list. And so to support that overall mission is each week is the theme is a poem. And so I start the event reading the poem, and then we take a few lines out of that and discuss it. People have questions or what have you, love to interact and just take a moment to really sink into the verses and the teachings and reflect on and kind of meditate into, you know, what do they mean for me in my life?
Mm-hmm.
And so really I've been guided to let these poems be the teachers and the pointers to people's direct experience with the divine and how that might play out for them.
Yeah.
So
well,
every Sunday.
Yeah. Every Sunday. Wow.
And that's every Sunday at my, if you just put in A Tune of Love in Facebook, you'll find me. Yeah, Facebook Live at my page, 8 o'clock every Sunday for a quick 15 minutes. And it's very relaxing. It's very centering. It's very spacious. I'm not presenting lots and lots of material. It's more really just to hold us all to come together into our hearts and a unity consciousness kind of feel and experience.
Well, great. Well, we're connected now on Facebook, so I'm gonna go ahead and put this in my phone to remind me about, you know,
great,
about 15 minutes before you start on Sunday, so I can join in if I'm out and about. But that sounds great. It's a wonderful way to start the week, and I think you know just that setup alone, you know, what we, you know, give our attention to is kind of what we're going to bring forth, and then if we set the intention that for a loving, productive, you know, easy, free-flowing, connected week, then that's what we're going to experience.
Yeah, and, you know, letting love lead is not something most of us were taught, you know. necessarily in our homes or in school. In school, it's going to take a minute to kind of integrate that and see what does that mean for me and how does it apply to my life. And so, you know, since I have 40 plus poems, it's do 40 weeks. I may take a break around the holidays, not sure. But to really just have a quick touch in and reminder every week in support of that, of one's own experience. So, yeah, that's kind of fun.
Well, sounds great. Well, I really want to thank you for your time and sharing with us. And I look forward to catching you on those Facebook Live experiences, and also following you on Facebook and your journey. So, again, Corinne, I really want to thank you for your time.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been a ball, Robert. I loved it.
Great.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Again, everyone, today my very special guest has been Corinne Holt. We've been talking about The Tune to Love, Creations for Well-Being. And again, you can find out more about Corinne and what she has to offer by visiting her website, which is www.attunetolove.com. And again, I do have a direct link to her website in the show page description. And be sure to tune in to her Facebook Live presentations every Sunday at 8 p.m. Eastern. And go to Facebook and type in Attuned to Love, at Attuned to Love. So, everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me. That's BITERADIO.ME. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Byte Radio Me. And our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.